To the consternation of many federal contractors, the Obama administration has made heavy use of executive orders to influence the nation's labor and employment policies over the last 8 years. The White House enacted more than a half dozen significant changes on matters ranging from non-discrimination against LGBT employees to minimum wage rules, and all of them are likely targets for repeal by the Trump administration. Ken Rosenberg is a partner at the law firm Fox Rothschild. He spoke with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu about what might be ahead.
There have been no less than 7 significant executive orders, several regulatory changes impacting federal contractors, and various agency directives that have been issued. Among those, probably the most significant have been Executive Order 13496, essentially requires federal contractors and subcontractors to post a notice at their workplaces advising employees of their rights under the National Labor Relations Act. This particular executive order is one that swings back and forth between Republican and Democratic administrations. When you have a Republican president, that executive order has been rescinded routinely, but when you have a Democrat in the White House, it's been promulgated. So that's one that, with almost 100% certainty, is going to be rescinded pretty quickly under the Trump administration, I imagine, within, you know, maybe the first 120 days that he's in office. The second executive order that was promulgated and that has probably a great degree of being potentially rescinded was Executive Order 13658. This executive order established a minimum wage of $10.10 with automatic CPI escalators clause that would take effect each January 1st. And it's likely that with President Trump's administration eye on keeping costs down, there's a strong possibility that that executive order also could find itself on the chopping blocks.
And Ken, one of the EOs that folks have watched really closely in this space is the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces executive order, sometimes called derisively the blacklisting executive order. You've actually been on the air and talked with us about that one before. So remind us about the substance of that one and where you think that one's headed.
That executive order essentially required contractors with more than $500,000 in contracts self-identify to the government any violations or citations that they've received from the various federal agencies regarding various federal employment, 14 different employment-related statutes, as well as state statutes that are similar to those. And then finally, there was the paycheck transparency portion of that executive order, which essentially said that contractors who were bidding again on contracts of more than $500,000 would have to disclose in their paychecks to employees each paycheck period basic information that I think most employers already currently provide their employees, such as the hours worked, the overtime hours that they are being paid, their actual compensation, any additions or deductions that they're receiving, and if they're being treated as an independent contractor. Interestingly, the Texas court did not enjoin that portion of the order, so that still takes effect on January 1st, and contractors, subcontractors should plan on still complying with that. But that Fair Pay and Safe Workplace executive order, as I indicated under the Trump administration, is unlikely to be enforced because it's unlikely that they're going to actually go ahead and challenge the injunction issued by the Texas court. So they'll probably just let that die in the vine, so to speak. Another executive order that problematic for employers or contractors is Executive Order 11478. This executive order extended the equal employment opportunity requirements and anti-discrimination requirements that are contained in the original Executive Order 11246, which created the affirmative action requirements for federal contractors. Contractors can no longer discriminate against individuals based on their gender identity or sexual orientation, and more importantly, have to update their EEO policies, their job advertisements, their taglines, and notify vendors and suppliers that they're not going to engage in those types of behaviors. But that's another executive order that definitely could be rescinded by the Trump administration. Another executive order that is out there is Executive Order 13665. It's a pay secrecy executive order. It prohibits employers or contractors from maintaining pay secrecy policies and from discriminating against employees and applicants who discuss or disclose or inquire about compensation. This executive order probably is not necessarily on the chopping block. There were some comments made by the President-elect Trump during the elections that he was in favor of pay equity, and this executive order enables both minorities and females to determine whether they're being underpaid. Another executive order that was passed by the Obama administration was Executive Order 13706. That executive order mandated that certain federal contractors and subcontractors had to provide up to 7 days of paid sick leave to employees. The Department of Labor actually was in the process of promulgating a final rule on that. It has not been issued. So that's an executive order that may not ultimately get implemented if the Trump administration determines not to proceed with that. So those are all, you know, very important and quite voluminous number of changes that the Obama administration, and I really have not even, I mean, that's really just the tip of the iceberg, but those are some of the most important ones that have occurred.
And we're talking with Ken Rosenberg, a partner with the law firm Fox Rothschild. And Ken, as you kind of indicated, for the most part, those EOs are not self-executing. There's a web of regulations implementing them over the years. So assuming the Trump administration wanted to repeal all those EOs you mentioned, what would be involved? I mean, does he just repeal the executive order itself and all the regulations automatically go away, or do you have to do an extensive rulemaking process on each one of these?
Well, when it comes to the executive orders, some of the executive orders are not that I just discussed do not actually have implementing regulations. They just took effect by virtue of the execution of the executive order. For example, the posting executive order that I started out discussing. Mm-hmm. That's one very simply that President Trump could simply issue an executive order rescinding that executive order, and he could just do that purely by signing an executive order himself without having to go through the rulemaking process. But for the executive orders in which there have been regulations promulgated, there is a pretty extensive rulemaking process that has to occur pursuant to the Administrative Procedure Act. It requires not only the Congress to act and to essentially indicate that it wants the regulations rescinded or changed or amended, but then for the agency to draft the proposed rule or regulation or any changes that might be made, it has to be reviewed and approved internally. Then those rules are forwarded to the Office of Management Budget for their review. Then it has to be published in the Federal Register, and it's recommended that that's occur for at least 60 days, so it'll be open to public comment. And oftentimes, the rulemaking period or proposed comment period is extended to even longer periods if it's a hotly debated topic. Once public comments are received, then the agency reviews the regulations, determines whether it needs to make any amendments or changes or revisions to the proposed rules. So the rulemaking process is quite complicated. It's quite onerous. It takes a long time. I mean, most instances, you don't see a rule, you know, regulation be changed in less than a year.
One thing we haven't talked about in detail is the Davis-Bacon Act, 1930s-era legislation that essentially requires prevailing wages to be paid to federal contractors. This comes up in the context of the expected $1 trillion infrastructure bill that President-elect Trump would like. And I think House Republicans have talked about either a complete repeal or at least a suspension of Davis-Bacon. Why would you want to do that in the context of an infrastructure bill? And would it potentially make more sense for just a suspension in that context?
Sure. It comes down to cost. I think that's really the bottom line. The Davis-Bacon Act, by requiring federal contractors, construction contractors, to pay a prevailing wage, significantly increases the costs for all public works. And if you're going to spend the $1 trillion in infrastructure projects, which are going to be subject to, that would otherwise be subject to the Davis-Bacon Act, you certainly would want to get the biggest bang for your buck. And you could do that if you suspended or possibly repealed the Davis-Bacon Act.
Yeah, and so I guess that would make sense in the context of, I mean, if your main goal is to get stuff built rather than to provide economic stimulus, that's a case where you might want to get rid of prevailing wage standards for a little while.
Yeah, I think it would have the question is, you know, not necessarily whether you're looking for, I mean, economic stimulus will happen by virtue of the fact that the money's being spent. More of it will probably go into the pockets of the federal construction contractors than the employees if you suspend the Davis-Bacon Act. So there will still be economic stimulation. You'll be pouring $1 trillion into the economy. It just won't be going to necessarily the employees who are working on those contracts. Depend on the construction contractor's generosity at that point.
Gotcha. Last thing, Ken, what does an incoming administration mean for the Department of Labor more broadly in terms of how it operates and what it does over the next 4 years, 8 years, and in particular, OFCCP and how it operates, how it's funded?
Sure. Congress has not been particularly in favor of the OFCCP's activities over the last 8 years. There's been quite a bit of complaints and consternation that has been voiced by members of Congress as well as the business community. And it's to be expected that the new administration is going to go along with any proposals to reduce OFCCP's budget, which would mean that there will be fewer audits, there'll be fewer auditors to conduct those audits, shorter, more focused audits. And overall, hopefully, the new administration will be placing in the director's position as well as other senior management positions individuals who are friendlier to business and have a more sympathetic ear to the plight of businesses that are doing business with the federal government. And ultimately, that should change the way that the OFCCP is doing business over the next 4 years and perhaps beyond. That remains to be seen, though.
That's Ken Rosenberg, a partner at the law firm Fox Rothschild, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.